Good morning.
Good morning.
May I reserve 3 minutes, please?
Certainly. Proceed.
May it please the court, Avril Rothrock for appellant Nooksack Business Corporation, or NBC. The court is reviewing de novo the partial denial of declaratory relief and the construction of the party's loan agreements to determine what assets are available for collection of a limited recourse judgment. When this loan originated in 2006, the lender agreed to look to the personal property of the casino as its only recourse in the event of default.
Including the pledged revenues.
Including revenues as the casino was operating, that's right. And it excluded recourse to real property interests. But now that the casino has failed and is no longer operating, the lender succeeded in obtaining a judgment that allows it to look to and benefit from the real property of the tribe for the next 20 years. This court should reverse that result for two reasons. One, it violates 25 U.S.C. Section 81 as an encumbrance on the tribe's trust property. And secondly, because it's an incorrect interpretation of the loan agreements. So I'll start with Section 81. Federal law prohibits an encumbrance of trust.
Let me just actually start with some facts rather than the law. I think you've set out the law fairly clearly, but it seems as though as long as the facilities are there, they wouldn't be looking to the land. They'd be looking to the facilities. Now, suppose the tribe or the business council decided to tear down the facilities. Right, there wouldn't be anything there, right? So there wouldn't be any more restriction on the land, I suppose.
We believe OSM has conceded that in the oral arguments that we have with the Superior Court, that if the building were torn down, that would be the end of it, and they would no longer assert that they're entitled to any revenues.
So they could then the business council could put something else up there.
That's correct.
And it wouldn't inure to the benefit of the creditor.
That's correct. But, Your Honor, the facility itself is part of the real property.
So that's your argument.
Yes. That's one of our arguments. And to get into that argument, we would ask the court to apply RCW 728-230, which holds in Washington that interest in future revenue that's generated from real property is, in fact, a real property interest. It's not a personal property.
Why would we look to state law when there's a federal regulation that defines encumbering for exactly for this purpose?
Well, the federal law doesn't talk about what type of an interest this is, and the parties did incorporate Washington law in the agreement. So we think that supplementary to the federal law, the court should look at the statute, and it should look at the decision by Judge Grosch in 1997, the Kesner versus Landover Court decision, that says that under Washington, this type of interest is a real property interest. And that doesn't conflict with anything in Section 81 or in CFR 84.002.
When we look at the commentary in the Senate Journal for the 2002 amendment that picks up encumbering, and we look to the commentary for the adoption of the final rule defining encumbrance, both of those give a similar example where the commentary says, if we have limited recourse financing, let me get it precisely.
It talks about
lender,
revenue.
And the lender is entitled to first right to the revenue from the facility, the contract or agreement would not encumber tribal land.
Right.
Why isn't that right on the money?
Because, Your Honor, it would relate to, well, the business is operating, that they are allowed to the revenues, and we see that plainly in Quantum and Gas Plus. This isn't an anti-management issue like under IGRA. This is different, and it relates to proprietary control. So if the party is allowed compensation from the revenues, that's okay under Section 81. But what's not okay is when there's no longer any operation and revenues from the business and you're looking to the real property and future uses for 20 years. I would point out in Gas Plus at 21 when they talk about proprietary control, they say that an agreement would violate new Section 81, which you're talking about, and it was adopted in 2000, that would place tribal lands beyond the tribe's ability to control the lands in its role as proprietor, and that an interference with the tribe's ability to use the land for their benefit would violate Section 81. So what Congress's intent was that the tribe's trust property that is held in trust by the USA wouldn't be tied up beyond 7 years in any way that would hurt the tribe's role as the owner of that property. And when you talk about the bundle of sticks that an owner has, we've put in our briefing plenty of authority that shows that part of that bundle of sticks is the right to future rents and profits out of the property.
And so that can't be pledged?
That's right. It can't be pledged. I mean, it could be approved, pre-approved under Section 81. That's what the law requires. They could have stuck with that language and gone to the feds and asked for approval of that language, and the outcome of that, it's possible they could have had it approved, but they didn't.
Well, then why would the commentary be so broad to say the right to first revenue, presumably not just past revenue, but future revenue?
Well, I don't think it's presumably. I mean, I also want to point out that Gas Plus says that all of that commentary is not crystal clear. So when you look at it all in context together, what they decided to do in 2000 was limit old Section 81 and really focus on whether you would be giving a third party rights in the property beyond just being able to have a right to revenue as you're operating, for example, in these cases, a gas distribution business. That it's okay if this third party is collecting their payment through revenues. But once that business ends, they cannot look to the stream of revenue that the tribe might get out of use of their property without getting that pre-approved.
So if the tribe had borrowed the money to run a dance hall and 6 months later converted it to be a gambling casino, there would be no right to revenues from that facility because it was no longer the activity for which the loan was taken.
Yes, because, I mean, what they're essentially doing is saying in their loan agreements, we don't have any interest that violates Section 81. We're not getting involved with the tribal trust property. And then turning around after the judgment is issued and saying, oh, well, except we want the stream of revenue off of the real property for 20 years. And that is what Congress has said in Section 81, you can't do without pre-approval. And when you put that together with our state law that's complementary to, it shows that it is a real property interest. Just briefly, I'll go into my time a little bit. It's also the wrong contract construction. And, you know, there is a limited, when you look at the definitions, you can see how the Superior Court would say, well, you have the right to rents and profits. We are talking here, I mean, the Superior Court has awarded future rents and profits. They have conceded in their brief at 19 that they don't have a right to unpaid rents and profits. And yet, that's exactly what the Superior Court awarded them. So it's totally contradictory. It's future rents and profits are not specified in the definition.
Whether now existing or hereafter arising?
Right. But it doesn't say to as a facility that's converted to another commercial property. So when you read the total agreement and you look at all the exclusions about real property interests and no lien on the property, no right to the tribe's trust property, in other words, that's one tree. But when you look at the forest, and you're interpreting all of these provisions together in the agreement, they don't have the right to the future rents and profits in a separate commercial enterprise. And they could have put that in the agreements in one sentence. They can articulate it here in one sentence, another commercial enterprise. But they didn't. And the reason that they didn't is because these form loan documents that they were using all across the country with different tribes, they didn't want to run afoul of Section 81. So that's why it's not there. So now they're coming back and trying to rewrite the agreement and trying to collect this limited recourse judgment out of assets that were never included in the agreement. Why? Because if they're there, they violate Section 81. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
May it please the Court, Philip Burai representing Outsourced Service Management. Every case and every decision, I believe, comes down to a fundamental premise. And Judge Garrett, in her opinion on facilities, provided that fundamental premise to the Court. And that is, there is a significant difference between owning land and the receipt of revenues. And what we're asking the Court to do today is to recognize and uphold that as it relates to this loan. The court's questions, I think, honed in correctly on the section 25 U.S.C. 81 issue, and that is under the old Act, the idea was any services related to land, any contract, had to be approved by the BIA. Well, as the history of BIA supervision of Indian tribes has shown us, the worst thing you can have for Indian self-determination and tribal government is BIA oversight. So in 2000, there was the amendment. And the amendment to this statute is titled the Indian Tribal Economic Development and Contract Encouragement Act. If the court adopts the argument that the Nooksack tribe is making today, you are not encouraging contracts. You certainly are not encouraging tribal development. What you're doing is what Gas Plus warned against, which is using Section 81 as an escape hatch for a tribal entity that made a contract that it now cannot repay. Let me go to the issue of the future revenues. Here's the loophole that we were concerned about that these loan documents plug. It is very easy for a debtor who owns a facility overnight to transfer the facility into a new corporate entity and to change its name and open it up the next day. Under the Nooksack Tribe and NBC's argument, their argument is if they did that, if they simply transferred it from NBC1 to NBC2 and reopened the casino, that any right of recourse for this limited recourse loan had been extinguished. Well, no lender is going to give $15 million, now $25 million, with that flimsy a collateral. In order for these loans to work, given that they're limited recourse loans, the lenders need to have not only the right to get revenues from the existing use of the property, the existing facilities, and I emphasize receipts, right? We are not assigning rents. We are not taking over any control of the property. Any money that gets paid for commercial activity on that property from the facilities is collateral that this lender can acquire. Well, it doesn't matter if it's the current use or if it's some future use, as long as those facilities are being used to generate revenues. And that's what we're talking about here. I note, too, that this is an abstract argument. The Nooksack tribe closed the casino, has an empty shell of a building now, and really to the detriment both of tribal interests and to the creditors, nothing is happening on that property. And really the only reason to do that is to try to avoid repaying this debt. It makes no sense economically, but that's NBC's decision.
Your response to the argument that if the agreement had explicitly included separate enterprise, that would run afoul of Section 81 without pre-approval?
No, if what we're talking about is revenues, and I go back to the fundamental premise of Judge Garrett, what we cannot do as a creditor is we cannot take any interest in the property. We can't lien the property. And we certainly couldn't take over and lease it to somebody else. We couldn't even go to the tenant and say, look, the tribe owes us, so you should pay your rent to us and not to the tribe. The only thing we can do is if the tribe, in its sole discretion, decides to use this property to make any money, and we find out, and we can trace those receipts and find them in a bank account, we can garnish them. But we're talking about cash only, right? We can't do anything with the property. Imagine any other $15 million loan with an unused piece of property sitting out there that hasn't been foreclosed on.
So is this problem unique to situations where there's a contract with the tribe or its business council? I mean, in other words, you say it's abstract. What's going to happen here? What's the solution in practical terms to having an empty shell of a building sit there for 20 years?
So here is the solution that the loan documents created that the tribe decided not to take. If the tribe went into default, and when I say tribe, I want to emphasize it's the tribal entity, NBC, but also the tribe was a co-signer on these. And as a practical matter, the tribal council is making these decisions. But the tribal entity had the right, under the springing depository agreement to take all the daily revenues from the casino and put them into a pledged bank account and then separate out revenues necessary for operating. So they could have kept this casino open under the lease document. And, in fact, the creditor wanted that. The banks wanted that because nobody gets paid if the casino's not open. But the tribe decided not to do that. Now, what ends up happening with the use of this property? The creditors have no say whatsoever in that. I mean, there's no recourse. That's, you know, that's the hard end of limited recourse.
But it does seem as if the arrangement, as you say, it created this situation. So, I mean, as far as the tribe is concerned, the building is sitting there. If they do anything with it, their enterprise is unrewarded. Right? I mean, that whatever they earn goes to somebody else.
Not necessarily, because it has to be something that generates revenues. If the tribe used it as a cultural center,
yeah.
If the tribe used it for any tribal purpose that doesn't generate revenues, that's done. I mean, that is a useful piece of property. I mean, it's out there on 542 right by the gas station. It certainly has value to the tribe. The only thing the tribe now has as a counterbalance to that is if they generate revenues with that property, with the current facilities, reopen it as a dance hall, then...
Or rent it to Deming Library or something like that to use as a community center. They still have to turn that over to the...
Certainly, and if the lease said that the Deming Library is going to pay them $10,000 a month, and we find out about it, and we trace the funds, and we find the bank account that it's in, and we get a garnishment on the day the bank has the money, then maybe we get it. On the other hand, if the tribe says Deming Library $1, we're out of luck. There's no recourse.
What's the significance of the commentary? Is it so fuzzy that it isn't give us a guidance, or is it all right on point?
No. I mean, Congress amended this act and did it with the tribes pushing hard to get the BIA out of the business of supervising tribal economic development. And any tribe that is serious about self-determination wants to be able to make these contracts and these complicated financing deals on their own without the BIA. I mean, anytime you say the word BIA, add 6 months to the amount of time it takes to get something done, at minimum, right? Nobody wants their involvement. The only reason why they're being brought in here, the only reason why this argument's being made is the escape hatch. Made a bad deal, we want to get out of it. But otherwise, the other tribes that I deal with, they want nothing to do with BIA supervision. Unless there are other questions of the court, I yield my remaining time to the court. Thank you.
Well, the clock reflects about what time you had left, so I'm going to let it run.
Okay. You know, the Superior Court did go astray, and this error's been repeated here, that there needs to be some interest in owning the land before the court can find an encumbrance under Section 81. That is not the way the statute reads. Encumber means claim or liability on real property, such as the declaratory relief here, established a liability, that hinders the use of the land. And in Quantum at 84, please look at the definitions that the Quantum Court uses there and compare that to what the Superior Court said at CP 1673, lines 16 to 18 of the record, because you'll see a dissonance there that we don't have to show an actual interest. And so you don't have to use RCW 728-230 to resolve this, although you could. But if you don't, it's not that we have to show a legal ownership interest. That's exactly wrong. It's an encumbrance that diminishes the value of the land to the tribe. And you know, using this property as a dance hall would be nice for the community, but it's not an economic benefit to the tribe. And so the relief that has been awarded here hurts the tribe. It hurts their real property. It might have been pre-approved, but they needed to get that pre-approval before getting this relief. We ask you to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Next up.